edition of Smith & Jones right here on Sportsnet 590. Fan Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Draft day in the NBA. And a very busy day expected for the Toronto Raptors with the fourth overall selection in this evening's draft. And we will discuss that at great length today. In about 10 minutes' time, Doug Smith of the Toronto Star will join us to talk about what we might expect to see from the Toronto Raptors. I would say not just in terms of drafting, but also potentially trading, as the Raptors are linked to a number of potential deals out there in what is expected to be a pretty busy and very significant offseason for the Raptors in many different ways, shapes, forms. So we will break it all down with Smitty. Again, national NBA writer and Raptors beat writer for the Toronto Star later on in the hour. Wes Brown, Canadian basketball scout and NBA draft expert, and we'll get his take not just on the Raptors, but the draft overall, as it seems to be, by all accounts, a very deep draft. We're looking at least the top four, if not top five. And Jonesy, there's always a surprise as well, where we look back and 3, 4, 5 years, somebody that went 14th, 27th, 52nd, whatever it may be, there's going to be somebody that pops out of this draft outside of the top four or five that ends up being a hell of a player as well, and that we're going to look back on and say, oh, how did all these teams pass on player X?
Well, two things come to mind there just hearing your opening remarks. I once worked with a young Eric Smith who every year claimed this is the most important summer in Raptors franchise history, and he's been right for like 17 years in a row, and you can just roll it out and say it again. And when you look at it, right, where are you in terms of contending? What's happening with the guy who has been the face of your franchise and, you know, widely considered the greatest player in franchise history? What's with, you know, the new guys coming in? Are you building? Are you a contender? So, yeah, again, it's another important, very, very important summer. And you're right, E, tonight someone will, as I call it, wreck the draft, right? You look at all the mocks and this guy goes first. It's Cunningham and then it's Green and then it's Mobley and then it's Suggs. And then, like, everybody's got it one, two. And then, like, you get to, like, sometimes it could be at two. Sometimes it could be at three. Sometimes it could be at one. Somebody goes off the board and all heck breaks loose. Like the year, you know, draft aficionados remember this, the year that the Raptors got Ed Davis, he was not supposed to be there, but somebody picked out of order, wrecked the draft, and he fell to the Raptors. I mean, so it's always kind of neat to watch and invoke some of the lines that people say. General managers always say, if I draft that guy, I might get fired. But if I don't draft that guy, I am definitely going to get fired. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes down once it's all done.
I don't know if it really is going to play into things a ton, but it may be interesting to see what the Raptors do even with those second-round picks, Jonesy, to your point where if certain guys – especially, clearly, folks, I'm talking deeper into the draft beyond the top five, the top ten, even the first round. But when you've got back-to-back picks, do you really need both of those picks, both of those selections? Could you dangle one or both, even if it's as a filler in another trade? Or is there value in two picks going to somebody else? Because the other thing, Jonesy, I would argue is whether Kyle Lowry stays or goes in free agency, sign and trade, or he's back with the Raptors, I would argue that this team is fairly young. Like, Lowry back helps bring that veteran leadership and that veteran presence overall and helps maybe the average age increase a little bit, right? Like, big time because of his age, let alone his tenure. But you look beyond Kyle Lowry, there's not a ton of experience on this team. There's young experience because of guys early in their careers like Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam who tasted a championship run. And yes, OG Anunoby was around, but not playing, right? So you have, yeah. I mean, look beyond that. With Chris Boucher and Malachi Flynn, and assuming if he's back, Gary Trent Jr. We're not talking about a roster that's stacked with a lot of vets. And I would think that's maybe something we can get into with Smitty in a couple of minutes' time as well. But I wonder if the Raptors management is looking at this thinking, all right, we're already pretty young, And as much as it's nice to have young talent and to groom and clearly the Raptors system, and that's all we've heard about from even a lot of the young potential draftees, the system and the grooming that the Raptors do and their developments, et cetera, well, I don't know. Do you want 2 second-round picks in addition to your first-round pick, in addition to the first rounder that you had last year? We're talking about 4 guys in 2 years to an already fairly young team? Maybe you want a little bit more vet. Am I wrong for thinking that way?
No, you're right. And we know this. As good as they look on paper and as well as they play in the regular season, if you're trying to get a chip, young guys don't win. They can be great in the sidecar. They can be great helping out. They can give you moments of glory and greatness, but they don't win consistently. You need a bell cow. You need somebody who you can hitch the cart up to. And now, that being said, maybe you develop some of these young players as the Raptors did, to the point where you can make a Kawhi Leonard. And that's what it's about. And I'm with you. Like, you need some battle scars. You need the experience of some of these, older vets, and better if they can play. Like, if they still have, I think you're searching for, as we always talked about, E, the young vet, right? The guy who's 27, 28. He's been in the league 5, 4, 5, 6 years, and he understands what it is that he has to do to win. He's got some battle scars. He's been, beat out in the playoffs when he felt he should have won, and those kinds of things. And I think those are the guys that you have to be looking for. And I would take those guys with the potential for growth, and sometimes trade away a second round pick, or package a couple of them together. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Speaking of trading picks, just to shift attention for a second before we bring it back to basketball, when Doug Smith joins us in a couple of minutes, the Toronto Maple Leafs yesterday, Jonesy, not a great day when you consider all that left. I mean, I know we can get potentially excited about looking at a new man between the pipes, but Frederik Andersen gone, Zach Bogosian gone, Zach Hyman gone. And Nick Foligno, now listen, I was listening last hour or an hour and a half ago, Nick Kiprios was on with JD, and Kipper made the point, and he would know better than me, can Nick Foligno even play anymore? But if you look back to just a few months ago, when he was acquired by the Toronto Maple Leafs for a first-round pick, and then many question if he was even healthy coming to Toronto, then he gets banged up and is gone from the postseason, can't play in your games, and you're bounced in the first round. So a guy that you brought in thinking is going to be a great veteran piece, you give up a first-round pick for him, he barely has a cup of coffee with the team, barely has another cup of coffee with any postseason appearances, and now poof, gone, signed as a free agent, and you gave up a first-round pick for this dude. And I think the other thing that I found stood out yesterday too, I'm sure a lot of it was just trying to say the right things and speaking in, average, boring cliche, whatever. But Zach Hyman, who got extremely rich, and I'm shocked at the money that Edmonton gave him, in not so many words, basically said it wasn't just about the money, it was the best opportunity to win. And he thinks there's a better opportunity to win in Edmonton with their goaltending situation and their defense situation than there is in Toronto, let alone any other market. That had to have been it, because he can't believe he has a better chance to win in Edmonton.
That's justifying the money he makes. That's it. That's it. Just doing your part to be a company person once you're getting the money. So,
You paid me handsomely, so I'll say nice things about you.
I'll say nice things. Yeah, check is in the mail.
I would do the same thing. I would absolutely. You want to pay me more? I'll say lots of great things about you. I feel like this might be the case with our man next as well. Step up. Cut the check. CTC for Doug Smith of the Toronto Star. Smitty, good to chat with you.
There ain't a check big enough, pal.
I don't
we'll,
buy
we'll
that.
We'll still say nice things, Doug.
I know, but I want a lot of zeros.
Okay. All right. Hey, it's like Jonesy and I have said for years, Smitty, we've said it on the air many times as well. Just give us the point. You can tell you what, Doug, you can, if you sign for 1.7, I'll give you the one. Just give me the 0.7. Even, you know what, 1.3, just give me the point. I'll take 300. You can have the million. Just give me the 300. I'll be happy.
That works for me. Let's get our agents onto that.
Yes, exactly. All right, Smitty, agents. You know, lots of new clients coming into the league tonight. I know the best answer is probably I have no idea. What do you think is going to happen tonight from a Raptors perspective as this thing unfolds over the first three picks and the Raptors are sitting there, we assume, at four, barring a trade?
I think they'll make the pick and they're going to have to choose between Barnes and Suggs. I think I've been around it too many years to know that all this chatter and all this talk, there's more of it this year than maybe any other in the last couple of years, but it's mostly posturing and bullcrap. I think the Raptors will make the fourth pick, and they're going to have to choose, I think, between Suggs and Barnes.
Doug, Eric and I were chatting about this. Where do you see this team in terms of experience in a contending window with slash without Kyle Lowry? Because, I mean, we know that tonight it's like de facto trade deadline day, the draft, because picks become people and you know, people, teams pick for other teams if they know there's going to be a deal. Where do you see the Raptors standing in all of that, Doug?
Well, I think if Kyle Lowry goes, and I think it's probably a 70-30 possibility that he does, I think they'll still be good. I think they'll be pieces away from being in the top two or three of the East, but they've shown in the past, and other teams have shown in the past, you can obtain those pieces as the season goes on. I don't think it's sackcloth and ashes and tear it down and they're going to finish ninth or 12th if Kyle Lowry goes. I think it's still a pretty good basketball team. You add the right fit, you do something in the season, you get in the playoffs, you win a round, someone gets turned an ankle, all of a sudden you're playing a conference final.
Speaking with Doug Smith from the Toronto Star, Doug, to that point, do you think, and I'm trying to, you know, sift through some of the comments that were made by Bobby Webster yesterday, and I think, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we all would acknowledge the Raptors have made it clear, as a lot of teams are, they're going to draft the best player available, period. And you touched on it a couple minutes ago. It's now just trying to figure out who they think the best player is at that four spot. Is it Suggs? Is it Barnes? Let me play the hypothetical for a second. Let's just assume for a second it's Suggs. Doug, does that impact what you are thinking, were thinking, might be thinking as it relates to Kyle Lowry and just your guard position overall, if suddenly you have Suggs and Van Vliet and Flynn, and it looks like or sounds like you're trying to bring back Gary Trent Jr. as well. There's a lot stocked in that cupboard at the guard position with guys, multiple guys that can play multiple positions, both those guard positions. Do you think that has then the impact on we're willing to or more open to walking away from Kyle or trying to work out a trade, et cetera? Do you think it's the trickle-down effect?
I really don't. We asked Bobby about that specifically yesterday, and he gave the cliche answer you'd expect him to do is, you know, we take the player we think the best, and then you make Nick Nurse figure it out. Or in a year and a half, you deal from your position of strength. So I don't think necessarily them drafting Suggs means they know Lowry's going. It means they think Suggs is the best player available, and they'll figure it out. And if they don't figure it out, then they'll make a move to unfigure it, to break the logjam that's there. But, you know, really, in guys like Flynn and Trent, you're talking about very unproven players. And you add a rookie into that mix, we think Flynn might be good. We think Trent Jr. might be good. But there's certainly no history to show that. So accumulate assets, good young players, and find out who emerges as the better of the three.
Doug, could some of those accumulating assets be linked to potential sign and trades?
Oh, I think everything is on the table. Sign and trades are a little bit difficult because of cap and apron and ceiling rules, which are, they're mathematics and I can't go into them because my head explodes. They're a little bit more difficult to pull off now than they were 7 years ago. But yeah, once you gather assets, you figure out how to play them. And I think a sign and trade to the right position for Kyle Lowry to allow him to make the money he wants for a team that may not have that money, it is certainly in play. Whether they can pull it off, maybe I have to bring back Steve Fruitman for that 4-team double sign and trade deal that got him Turk.
Speaking with Doug Smith from the Toronto Star, I've not heard Fruit's name in a while. That's a good pull on that one, Smitty. What is this team ultimately? And we're going to obviously get back to draft chatter specifically as well, Doug. But when you look at the Raptors, what do you think they need most? And I don't necessarily mean in the draft. Again, we're talking draft the best player, not position. But when they go out into the free agent market, into the trade market, what do you think needs to be addressed most on this team?
Well, they got no size. They got no centers. Well, they have no centers under contract. I'm sure they will they'll pick up the option on Boucher, and they might do Ken Burch as well, and they could do Freddie Gillespie. But really, that's a rather underwhelming trio of centers. Chris Boucher is not a center, first of all. Nick Nurse made that very obvious to us what he thought at the end of last season. So as they look for help, they need front court help. You know, Siakam may not play until December. You don't know. You've got a bunch of other guys in there that mix, like I said, Boucher, Birch, maybe Gillespie. They need some bulk, and they need some wisdom and age up there. And I think that's got to be the top priority when they go out shopping starting Monday night.
Doug, we've all watched the draft for years and years, and it just seems like every year these kids are coming in. I didn't even know I would say more NBA ready, at least more NBA savvy. I'm looking at the top five today, and we had Eric and I had Fran Fraschilla on a while back. He said any one of these top five guys could turn out to be a franchise changer down the road. How does that play in with some of these teams, as we talked about, like with the Raptors or you know, teams willing to trade? Or do you really take that to heart and say, no, we're going to take a kid, we're going to work with him, and we're going to be patient and wait it out 5, 6, 7 years to see if he comes around?
Well, the Raptors have proven over time that they are willing to be patient. Now, they were patient with Pascal. They were patient with OG. They were patient with DeMar, for goodness sakes. And so they're willing to do that. But you get to the point where the front office needs to know what kind of person they're getting. All these kids can play. They can shoot, and they can run, and they can jump, and they're all gifted athletes, no question about it. It's what kind of men they're going to turn into, and that's the crapshoot. And that's where the homework that you've done talking to friends, relatives, coaches, opponents, referees, you got to learn about what makes these guys, these young men, tick, and guess what is going to make them tick when they're 23 and 24 years old, when they're really ready to have an impact in the NBA.
Speaking with Doug Smith from the Toronto Star, again, the NBA draft going tonight. The Toronto Raptors selecting fourth overall, and again, a chance to grab one significant player, and perhaps it's a guy like Jalen Suggs. Smitty, when you look at the potential for, and I'm trying to walk a fine line here because I know you hate the fantasy stuff as much as we do, when you look at the potential for moving up, do you think it's there for the Raptors? Do you think there's a deal that would make sense that would allow them to get above four, to maybe get into the market for somebody like Mobley, who might address the need for a big that you're talking about? Or do you see if the Raptors make a deal, it's more moving down and not up?
I think I don't know for sure, but I think the only deal is back. I don't think they have the capital in assets to move up without gutting their team or making a significant change in the way the team is. And then I don't think you're making it any better. You're just making it different. I don't think they have the capital to move up. I think they have the willingness and the ability to maybe move back a little bit if the guy they want is going to be there at 6, 7, 8. But even then, you're asking a team to spend some of its capital to get into the four spot. And they're going to have to really love the guys that they're going to get there. So I think it's, Bobby said this yesterday, and I think everybody agrees, it's easier to move back than up. And especially with this wrap, they only have four guys under contract. So I don't know what you're going to give up, Van Vliet, Ananobi, Siakam, Flynn, and the four pick to move up somewhere. I just don't see that. I don't think they want to spend that kind of asset to get a guy like Mobley, who can probably fill a need, but then you've created another need by spending some of the guys you got on your team.
So, Doug, what do you see? What do you think in this draft? Because the Raptors have proven. I mean, they find guys all over. We're talking hypotheticals.
Yeah.
The chance that they say, you know what, we're happy moving back. Like we Eric just talked about trading up. Maybe you keep whoever it is at four. Maybe there's no deal. But what are the possibilities that you find a guy and you trade down? You say, we're going to save a little money, and we think we can get just as good a player a little bit further down the ledger.
Oh, I think that possibility exists. I think you guys know, when I wrote about this today, Mazai goes off the board a lot. Yeah. He went off the board with Bruno. He went off the board with Siakam. He went off the board with Ananobi because he saw a guy that he wanted to get. And if he sees a guy that he wants to get and he thinks he's going to be there at 6 or 7 or 8, then I can absolutely see him and Bobby saying, okay, I'm going to give up 4, get a later pick, like in that second tier of the first lottery, of the lottery, and we'll get another asset with that. So I think that possibility is far stronger than them moving up, and I don't think people should discount that at all.
Speaking with Doug Smith of the Toronto Star. Doug, when you look at what Milwaukee did this season and finally winning the championship, then factor in, you know, Brooklyn and the talent they have, et cetera. I know I'm asking you this question on July 29th before we've even seen off-season movement and improvements, et cetera. How do you look at the upcoming season if you're the Toronto Raptors or any number of teams trying to figure out where you fit in the current landscape, let alone where you could be in a year from now, a couple of years from now, as you're trying to stay relevant, competitive with some teams that have tried to create a little bit of separation in terms of the top couple of tiers, the top couple of teams in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah, you know what, Eric, you're really guessing, but I think if you're guessing, you think there's a lot of teams that think they aren't that far off. I get that Milwaukee's really good, but they got to make a decision on Portis. They got to make a couple other decisions there, and Brooklyn has, you know, got absolutely the most talent, but you don't know how healthy they're ever going to be. So that's another question there. I mean, if you're the Raptors, you're looking at the East, and I think the other teams in the East, like the New Yorks, the Phillies, the Bostons even, are thinking, okay, it is still very much open. Brooklyn has the most talent without question. Milwaukee has a championship pedigree, but they also don't know what their roster is going to look like come November. And we'll key pieces be gone. You know, they're going to have Holiday, they're going to have Middleton, they're going to have Giannis. But what do they do with Lopez? Does Portis come back? Does he take the cut? Like, does he take less money to stay there and win again? Maybe he does. And if you're the Raptors, you're thinking, okay, the East is still pretty much there. There's not, you know, Brooklyn is probably the super team, but until you see those three guys play more than 25 games together, you don't know. And that's been proven. They haven't. So not just last year. You look at Kyrie, you look at Harden, you look at Kevin Durant, they're hurt, and they're getting up there. So I don't think you can say 100% they are the overwhelming favorites in the East next year. They're the favorites, but they got to play 82 games and then get through the playoffs.
Yeah, they got to. You're right, Doug, develop some chemistry. I mean, we saw that it took the big three in Miami a while to figure it out. I mean,
yeah,
absolutely.
Maybe they can. Maybe they absolutely can. They're talented. They're gifted. But what do they do with Dinwiddie? Like, what are the pieces around them? What do they do with Brown? Those kind of guys. Like, there's still a lot of flux in the East. And I think if you're the Raptors, or if you're New York even, or if you're Boston, you're thinking, okay, we don't need to drastically change our team to give ourselves a shot to be playing for a conference championship next year.
Doug, want to shift gears just a little bit here. I know you're a big supporter and you've written about them for years. And like us, you're on board behind this Canadian women's Olympic team. 1-1 now after a good win over the Koreans last night. Well, I guess tomorrow morning or yesterday morning or whatever time it was in Tokyo. Third, this is killing me because I said to Eric, I'm okay to wake up once to watch the British Open or once to watch the Aussie Open, but I don't know if I could string 2 weeks of 4 a.m., man. I don't know about that. But that being said, they get a good win, and they really haven't had terrific play. I mean, she's been solid, but Kia Nurse hasn't gone off yet. So, mean, I think that's a good thing for that they're doing it, and they really haven't all hit their stride yet.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Jones. The first half of the first game against Serbia, they looked like a bunch of strangers playing together, basically because they were. That was their first game together as a team in 17 months, and it takes a little time to figure it out. The second half against Serbia and last night, they looked like Canada. They guarded tenaciously. They made enough shots. They got balanced offense. I think they had, what, 7 players between 10 and 18 points or 9 and 18 yeah. points? That's pretty balanced scoring, and I think that's what makes that team really good. Is they don't need Kia to get 20 a night to have a chance to beat a team. Now, Spain's a really good team. They blew out Serbia this morning and beat them by 15. So you don't know what they are, but then, you know, Korea played them to a 4-point game. So tomorrow night, they certainly got a shot. And Spain's good, or Saturday night, I guess, or Sunday morning or Tuesday, whatever the next game is. Spain's really good, but I don't think Canada's worried about it. If Canada thinks if they play to their potential and to their style, they got a shot to win, and I do too. I was really impressed with the way they guarded last night because they looked like the 2012 Olympic team. They just yes. got at people. They got at people, and they're far more athletic than that group was. So I think they're kind of built to play the Spains and the Serbians and the Australians and that kind of level. I think it's got a chance to be an epic game on Saturday night. I can't wait for that to see it.
Yeah, 9:00 Eastern on Saturday night. I'm not doing the conversion as to what time it is overseas. 9:00 Eastern is the game if you want to watch it. 9 p.m. Eastern, I should say,
yeah.
Saturday evening. Smitty, thanks for the time and the insight as always. Enjoy tonight, whatever becomes of it.
I'm going to get through tonight. We'll enjoy tonight tomorrow when it's all over.
All right, Doug.
All right, guys. Take care.
Doug Smith of the Toronto Star, always appreciate his time. And we'll stick on this draft chatter with our next guest as well. He's going to join us in a couple of minutes' time. We'll be talking to Wes Brown, Canadian basketball scout and NBA draft expert. I did want to mention, though, quickly as well, and you might have heard it at the top of the hour with George Russick, but the Toronto Blue Jays making a move today to acquire an arm. That's what they certainly needed to do and get a little bit of help in the bullpen, and Brad Hand coming over from the Nationals. So that's the first move. Are there more to come? We shall see. But you'll have more on this deal later in the day, not just on Writer's Block at the top of the hour, but later on today, 5 to 7, Baseball Central, getting you set for the 4th of 4 against the Red Sox as the Jays look to earn the split before coming home tomorrow. And, Jonesy, I want to mention this, and I think some of the other shows have too. I don't know if I'll read through every single piece of information, but if it's not clear to some folks, with the Jays coming home tomorrow with the first series back at Rogers Center in 670 days, face coverings are still required at all times for any fans over the age of 2, and you've got to be wearing the face mask actively unless you're eating or drinking. Mobile tickets only. There's no paper tickets. You're going to be screened for symptoms when you come in. Cashless payment, physical distancing. This is all stuff that you should know. We've been living through for a year and a half. Modified concessions. So there's going to be a lot of prepackaged stuff, so it reduces the crowding and reduces touch points and whatnot. So it's going to be prepackaged food, so you don't have to sit around and wait and whatnot. And then, of course, increased cleansing sanitation throughout the building and hand sanitizers as well. So it's going to look a little bit different, but it's certainly going to feel good, I'm sure, to be back in the building and back at home for the first time in almost 2 years.
Yeah, it'll be great. It'll be great. And, hopefully this kind of spurs the Jays with a little momentum, and it's not too much of a distraction and they can get it going. They really need to pick it up, and maybe this will give them a lift.
Yeah, they definitely need to pick it up, no doubt about that. And hopefully a little momentum going into tomorrow night, opening up that series against KC. But again, it's tonight, the 4th of 4, against the Red Sox before they finally do indeed get to come home. When we come back to the NBA draft we go on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith & Jones. Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you here till the top of the hour. Writer's Block takes over at 2 o'clock later on today, Baseball Central, and then the Jays and Red Sox as the Toronto Blue Jays make a move today, and a fairly significant one, getting left-handed pitcher Brad Hand from the Washington Nationals in exchange for catcher Riley Adams. Hand, 3-time All-Star, career ERA of 3.65, led the major leagues last year in saves. So a significant move for the Jays. They needed bullpen help. They just got some. But will that be enough to help propel them the remainder of the season as they look to their first homestand in almost 2 years starting tomorrow? But again, it's the Red Sox tonight before getting set for KC tonight as well. Not just the Jays and Red Sox, but the NBA draft with the Toronto Raptors selecting fourth. And as we just spoke to Doug Smith from the Toronto Star Boat, we'll continue that conversation and dig a little bit deeper with Wes Brown, Canadian basketball scout and NBA draft expert. Wes, thanks for the time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Hey, yesterday, Wes, Bobby Webster, GM of the Toronto Raptors, used the word, and it was a direct word, significant, in terms of the potential for movement or what he felt was significant movement around the NBA. And referring to tonight slash this offseason. Do you think, Wes, it kind of all begins tonight in the first domino falls with a trade that involves a pick and we just see the trickle-down effect from there for a bunch of teams? Or how do you see this all playing out? And I'm not talking just Raptors, but with the league in general.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of movement tonight. There are a few stars up, right, like Ben Simmons is being discussed in trades. I know Bradley Beal's name is out there, C.J. McCollum. I also know teams as high as two have discussed making trades, right? And I'd say there's four or five spots in the lottery that I've heard about deals or at least deals being discussed, including the Raptors. So I think there will be a lot of movement tonight, and I think you will see some star/superstar-type pieces move tonight that might change, you know, the look of the NBA moving forward.
Wes, you know, thinking about that, a deal's never done till it's done, and we hear all of the stuff going on. What would cause a team to, I don't know, get cold feet or say, look, we were going to do this, but maybe it's safer to keep the pick, take the kid? Or the other part of it is, well, you know, we've given up a potential star for something that maybe is a little bit more of a known commodity but doesn't have the same ceiling. What to you, because you hear all these as we do, what do you think factors into that most in terms of pulling the trigger on these things?
Well, first of all, I think you have to look at if the player you want is available there, right? And you kind of project in your draft rooms. I mean, this is why they have, for the last 2+ weeks, every NBA team has their entire staff fly in and they go over every possible scenario. You just never know what's going to happen, and you have to build out your list, and you also have to know what's out there and what you could potentially trade for. So you really have to prepare, right? And this is why you're hearing all these rumblings about the Raptors. You're hearing stuff about potentially trading OKC, trading Shea at 6. You know, maybe the Raptors inquire there and see what's available. But you have to have a list, and you also have to consider what stage you're at, obviously, right? I mean, a young team can afford to take a young guy and take a risk, whereas an older team might be looking for a guy to help them win now. You know, a great example of that is Golden State has number 7. You know, Golden State could take Kuminga, who physically is unbelievable and could end up being the best guy in the draft. But is he going to help them this year? No, he's not going to help them for multiple years, right? So that's where a team like that might be looking for one of those guys like CJ, another shooter, or Ben Simmons, or, you know, whoever, to help them win right now. So, I mean, it's a case-by-case basis, and you have to evaluate it, you know, as you go. But in that moment, I mean, I'm sure, like you guys, we can all imagine, it's a difficult decision to make.
Speaking with Wes Brown, Canadian basketball scout, NBA draft expert. Wes, give me your... obviously, without factoring in trades that could happen, et cetera, and moving up and down and all over the place and whatever, as it stands right now, just based on talent alone, based on the way you've projected things, I assume you've got Cade Cunningham going number one, but how do you see the first, you know, 3, 4, 5 picks playing out this evening? And then that might open us up to more chatter going forward here.
Yeah, I don't have Cade Cunningham number one. I have
Jalen Tech
number one. Yeah. So, I mean, that should make Raptor fans pretty happy. I think Suggs is the ultimate winner that makes everyone else better, can think the game at the highest level. I think he's going to be elite, and he's been playing football 6 months of the year until this past year, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, the knocks on him, you know, maybe a bit of shooting. his handle a little, his pace getting to the rim and finishing. I mean, he's got all the athletic ability and he's got the IQ. It's just about a little bit of physical development. But to me, he is Kyle Lowry at 6'4 and a better athlete. I think he's going to be an elite player in the league. So he's my number one. I do think the draft will go as planned. Cade, number one. Evan Mobley going three, Jalen Green two, and Suggs four. I think they'll probably go in order. I know the Raptors are looking at other options, but I think it's too hard to pass on a guy like that. And if you look at the types of guys the Raptors have drafted, you're actually going to look at two guys who fit a lot of their mold in Suggs and Barnes, who seem to be the top two names there at four. Barnes being a long athlete that you'll need to develop, much like Pascal and OG, and Suggs, a winning guard who won throughout college and, you know, has that IQ and feel for the game with upside as well, much like, you know, Malachi Flynn and Fred VanVleet. So I think it'll go as planned, but I have Suggs at number one, and I think a lot of scouts around the league actually do as well.
Wow. As we always talk about West, does Detroit wreck the draft with the first pick? Give us some names a little further down the draft board that probably deserve a little bit more respect or are probably going to be better than projected if you look at where they're picked.
Yeah, there's a guy I love, Josh Giddey, who seems to actually be rising. He's a 6'8", 6'9", point guard, an Australian kid that played in NBL Australia like LaMelo Ball did last year. And the word is that Memphis traded up to get him at 10. He's an elite passer, maybe the best passer in the half court, you know, the best breakdown guy in the draft. I think he's being overlooked. I think his character is really high. His shot needs some work. He only shot 29% from three this year. But, you know, if you look at a team like the Raptors that like to develop guys, I don't think it's a mental hurdle. I just think he's got to get the reps in and he'll be totally fine. And I think he has star type of upside. So he's a really interesting guy. Another player I love, another winner, and really winners are what I look for more than talent, is Ayo Dosunmu, who was at Illinois this past year, a junior guard, 6'5", can run pick and roll, really good defender, tough as nails. I think his workouts I heard weren't as great as I would have thought they'd been because he's such a tough, hard-nosed guy that can defend the ball. His upside, I think, is pretty high. I think he can be a starter, and at worst, he's your backup point guard. He's being discussed maybe even in the early second round, and he's a guy that I have as a top 20 pick on my board. So he's a guy I really like as well. These are winning types of players that make others better that, you know, at the worst will be good for your locker room. So those are two guys that I love that aren't being talked about as much right now.
Speaking with Wes Brown, Canadian basketball scout, NBA draft expert. Wes, this question may play into the answer you just gave, but I'm going to ask it anyways. When most people are talking about this year's draft, as we've already discussed as well, in whatever order, Cunningham, Green, Mobley, Suggs, Barnes, a lot of people talking about top five, top four for sure. Any one of them could be a number one pick, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a guy, and this plays into where you might have just answered this, is there a guy that you and I and Jonesy were sitting in 2 years, 3 years from now talking, saying, man, can't believe 13 teams passed on this dude. Or
on Giannis.
On Giannis. Can't believe this guy went in the second round and he's an all-star now. Do you see that player that's kind of lying in the weeds that could potentially be that type of guy for a certain team?
Yeah, you know, there's a few guys that come to mind with what you're saying. One would be Kai Jones. Kai Jones is a freak athlete. When you talk about unicorn, he's 6'10", 6'11", was at Texas a sophomore this past year. If you look at Pascal Siakam, Pascal's got all the tools, but Kai Jones has it and more. He's got, you know, a really good fluid shot. He can attack you off the bounce. He can protect the rim. He's really a unique type of specimen, and I've heard from workouts that they were incredible too. The problem with Kai is he's never really been a primary guy. I actually saw him live in high school. And I remember at Brewster Academy, he was just a role guy. And the same at Texas, right? He didn't even score double-digit points, but he was super efficient. Now, can he learn to become more of a primary guy and actually impose himself? Because if that guy puts it together, he's going to be potentially one of the top 10 players in the NBA. Like, he is as freaky as you get. at his size and his physical tools. Another guy that's a freak athlete is Keon Johnson at Tennessee. He's a 6'5 shooting guard that was a freshman this past year. And his upside, I mean, he was, I think, the highest leaper of all time at the draft combine. He's shown, you know, he can actually make some plays off the bounce in the half court. His shot needs work. He's an elite defender, I would say, and at worst will be able to defend not just the ball, but at least the 1-3 really well. But he's got to put it together offensively, and he's a name that's been sliding recently for whatever reason. But if Keon puts it together, man, he's got elite, elite athleticism, like NBA superstar athleticism. So he's another really interesting guy that if they pan out and he ends up going outside the lottery, could, you know, could make teams turn their heads.
Interesting. And what you're telling me, Wes, is it's kind of like a guy. I mean, I think about last year's draft, Patrick Williams, right? At Florida State. He wasn't even a starter on his team, yet he was, you know, he was a lottery pick in the NBA. So there are those guys out there. Who in your eyes, give us the top guys, Wes, that you think outside of the top five that would be most NBA ready, could step in, not necessarily for Milwaukee or Brooklyn or somebody like that, but could step in at in Minnesota or Sacramento and like Anthony Edwards play right away and kind of hold his own in the NBA?
Yeah, one guy I love is Chris Duarte, who people think is Canadian. I believe it's said was born in Montreal, but I'm not sure that's really the case. I think he identifies as Dominican. He was a 6'6 shooting guard, a senior at Oregon this past year. Really impressive three-level scorer, defends the ball really hard, long, pretty good athlete, super skilled. Like, there is no way Chris Duarte fails. He will be able to step on an NBA court and at worst be a floor spacer, but probably can even create his own shot as well in the half court. And he's being, that, you know, that's part of the reason he's being looked at in the late lottery now. He went from being maybe a second-round pick earlier in the process, and now he's being discussed in that 14-15 range between Golden State and Washington. And he's a guy, I think, again, that could step in right away and actually help you win. And another guy like that would be Davion Mitchell, obviously national championship point guard at Baylor. He's being discussed in the top 10. And if you looked at him before the tournament, he wouldn't have been even close to that. And he's an interesting guy, a little like Patrick Beverley, a 3-and-D type point guard. I'm not sure how much he makes others better. Kind of scares me a little. I think their coaching was a result of his playmaking ability. I'm not sure he's much of a breakdown guy, but more of a execute-your-offense guy. But he can shoot it pretty well. He defends incredibly hard. He can definitely step in and play in the NBA today. But he's a guy I actually think his upside is limited. So that's really always what you're balancing, right? Who can help me today versus what you can do for me tomorrow.
Hey, Wes, we're up against a break, but I want to slide in one quick one just in terms of the Canadians. And speaking of Duarte, if we're not officially calling him Canadian, we're allowing him to be quasi-Canadian. How does it look tonight for – there are a number of kids that are hoping to hear their name called. How do you think it unfolds this evening for the Canadians?
Yeah, I think it should be a solid night. I think Josh Primo most likely is a first-round pick. 6'5 shooting guard. He was a freshman at Alabama this past year. He's most likely going to go pretty high. I've heard anywhere from late lottery to the end of the first round. There's three guys that I think are vying for a second round pick and all have a pretty solid shot. One would be Eugene Omorie, a 6'6 senior, 3-4 out of Oregon. Really high IQ winner that can step in and play right away. A.J. Lawson, 6'6", super athlete out of South Carolina. I actually think, or I've seen a lot of rumblings with the Hornets at 56 or 57. They have those two picks, and if A.J. Lawson, who's had a great draft process, falls, I think he'll be one of those two. And the last guy, Dallin O'Banton, 6'9", point guard, nobody's talking about out of Nebraska. And I've heard the Raptors actually like him. He's an elite passer, just needs to improve his shot. So if someone's willing to take a chance and improve that, I mean, you don't find guys with his size and passing ability. So those are the four guys. I think the final three, solid chance in the second round, and Primo's a first-round pick.
Wes, we appreciate the time and the insight today, man. Thanks for breaking it down for us, and enjoy this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, Wes.
There is Wes Brown, and we appreciate his time. Canadian NBA scout, and draft expert, and the expertise showing its true colors over the last 10 minutes, breaking it all down for us, Jonesy. And it is going to be interesting when you've got a guy like Wes saying that, you know, he has Jalen Suggs as the number one guy. And then in the midst of our conversation, we're getting tweets from Adrian Wojnarowski that the Pistons have made it be known that Cade Cunningham is indeed going to be the number one pick tonight. That's who they're selecting. Unless it's a giant smokescreen and a big ruse, that's who the Pistons are taking tonight. And I you know, I don't know anything. I'm not talking any sources here plugged in this, that, or otherwise in terms of Raptors front office or whatever, Jonesy. I'd be shocked if they don't take Suggs if he's still on the board at fourth. I really
would. I don't know how. Yeah, we were talking in Fran. Like, I don't know how you leave him there. It's one of those, if you're the general manager. I might get fired if I pick him, Jalen Suggs, but I know I probably will get fired if I don't pick him. So I just don't think you can leave him on the board.
More Smith and Jones in a moment right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith and Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. About a minute left before we wrap it up and turn it over to Writer's Block again later on today. Baseball Central and then the Jays and Red Sox with the Blue Jays making a deal today. Major League Baseball trade deadline tomorrow. NBA draft going tonight. Jays coming back home tomorrow. Leafs already in the midst of free agency. This is a wild time that we're not used to, Jonesy, when we're approaching the month of August. This is usually the dog days of sports, and it's far from it.
Far from it because the calendar has set us back. But you know what? We welcome it. And it'll be interesting to see what happens tonight. And we'll have lots to talk about tomorrow when we wind it up.
Yes, sir. Final show tomorrow. Smith and Jones right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.